Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
The only country outside of Ireland that celebrates St. Paddy's Day as a national holiday is the Petite Isle of Montserrat in the middle of the Eastern Caribbean. This British Overseas Territories flag is emblazoned with the Irish harp in Erin, along with the obligatory Union Jack in a corner. Pass through customs on Montserrat and your passport is stamped with a green Irish clover. Today, common surnames on Montserrat include Bodkin, Brown, Blake, Mead, O'Gara, Darcy, Ryan, French, Joyce, Kerwin, Sweeney, Riley, Driscoll, Castle, Lynch, Skerritt, and more. Numerous island geographic locales pay homage to the motherland, such as Cork Hill, Potato Hill, Roach's Mountain, Sweeney's Well, Kinsale, and Delvins, and long-vanished Irish sugar plantations are remembered as Farrell, Riley, Dyer, Molyneux, and Lee. How did the Irish get there? Emigration from Ireland to the lush green Caribbean commenced in earnest on the heels of the defeat at the Battle of Kinsale near Cork in 1601. Disgruntled and disenfranchised Irish Catholics packed their bags in hopes of a better life in the Caribbean, where they set up shop as planters. For many, it was brutal indentured servitude on St. Kitts and other Caribbean islands for 5 to 7 years' work in exchange for their ultimate freedom and the hope of someday becoming landholders. The next rush of Irish Catholic emigrants arrived under duress. They were unwilling deportees, transported following Oliver Cromwell's genocidal invasion of Ireland in 1649. So many Irish were deported as slaves by Cromwell to work the sugar plantations on the island of Barbados that for a long period of time in Irish history, a euphemism for deportation was to be Barbadosed. Subsequently, even more were deported under Cromwell's son's watch, departing from Cork and Kerry to Wexford and Galway, Clare and Donegal to Tipperary, Waterford, Drogheda, and Westmeath. Some were literal slaves, while others toiled as indentured servants. Eventually, clashes with the anti-popish Cromwellian-influenced British colonial power structure on St. Kitts, Nevis, and other Caribbean crown colonies led many free Irish to migrate over to Montserrat in hopes of opportunity and religious freedom. By the mid-1700s, Montserrat census records listed more than 1,500 Irish, 700 English, 52 Scots, and 1,000 West African slaves. Many Irish became successful planters and eventually became slaveholders themselves. Not coincidentally, the only slave revolt recorded on the island was planned for St. Patrick's Day, as the slaves were confident their overlords would be three sheets to the wind from too much Guinness. It almost worked, but someone snitched off the plot. Through intermarriage and mass baptisms, slaves were given their Irish master's last name in mass, and Irish surnames proliferated on the island that remain common today. This year, the week-long St. Paddy's Festival Affair commences on March 10th. The very next day, there's the pub crawl, followed by the Emerald Community Singers Concert. On the 14th, it's Up the Mountain Hike and Cycle Affair, followed by a cricket competition. On March 15th, there's the Aquarius Montserrat Fishing Competition and the Junior Calypso Show. On March 17th, St. Paddy's Day itself, it's early morning jump up and breakfast, followed by a freedom run and walk, and of course, the highlight of the day, the St. Patrick's Day Parade. What a great place to be for St. Paddy's Week. Come along and let's join my friend Ivan Brown. We'll also visit with David Crichton, consultant with the Montserrat Development Corporation, as he adds his thoughts about the island's historic connection with the Emerald Isle across the sea. Ivan, Ivan Brown, you are Munster Russian?
I'm Munster Russian. My father, my grandfather, my grandmother from this lovely island.
Going way back in time.
Yes, way back.
One of the things that I love about Montserrat, even as a myth and legend and lore from the outside, is its Irish connection.
We now celebrate the 17th of March as St. Patrick's Day, the only country other than Ireland that does that.
We could start with your passport stamp and your flag.
The passport stamp is a shamrock. The flag actually contains the Union Jack in one corner and Erin, the symbol of Ireland, playing a harp in the center of the flag. And on the old government house, the center gable was adorned by a shamrock.
Let's talk about the reason why that is in place today, because it's an incredible historic story.
The first Irish came to Montserrat in 1632 from St. Kitts. They actually left Ireland to flee religious persecution.
This was before the Cromwellian deportation.
Yes. Some historians say it was driven by the Cromwell deportations, but they came to St. Kitts, set up in St. Kitts, and then came to Montserrat. The funny thing is, it's not only the plantation owners were Irish. What a lot of people don't realize, too, is that some of the first slaves in Montserrat were actually white Irish slaves.
They came over as indentured servitude?
It was actually more as slaves than indentured servitude. And it's a part of our history that not too many people know about.
Yeah.
So we had both the African slaves and the Irish slaves. Of course, the Irish slaves had more upward mobility than the African ones, but they were there in the beginning. Because these slaves tended to take the surname of the owner of the plantation, you ended up with Galways, Ryan, Sweeney's, my own name, Brown with an E, is from one of the original 12 tribes of Galway. So there was that historical connection with Ireland. A lot of the plantation overseers were Irish, and in fact the first and only slave revolt we had took place on the 17th of March because the slaves felt that all the Irish plantation owners and overseers would be drunk from celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Great strategy.
Yes, exactly. Unfortunately, somebody snitched, so it wasn't successful.
Well, that's amazing. And then even today, it remains, even in the mass. Tell us about some of those elements that remain as residual in music and song.
Well, we have the masquerade, which is African, but has some Irish connotations. Our national dish, goat water, is actually a very spicy Irish stew. We've tried very hard now to link both the Irish heritage with the African, to the extent that St. Patrick's Day celebrations is now St. Patrick's Week, and incorporates not just Irish heritage. You know, we have Guinness, we have Green Guinness during the week, but also the African Music Festival is to also bring in the African part of our heritage. So it's joint Irish and African.
And then because of intermarriage, that's very true today as a legacy, isn't it?
As a nation, for years we were known as the other Emerald Isle or the Emerald Isle of the West. Because, as you've seen, it's a very lush island. People look at it and see emerald everywhere, emerald green and whatnot.
So it's a double metaphor.
It is. We've never shirked away from the Irish heritage that we have. Some of our cities, or towns, should I say, were Cork Hill, Kinsale. All back to the Irish heritage.
Very fascinating. On RTE, years ago, they did a whole in-depth special about the island.
And we've had a number of people who've actually come and written books about it.
And wasn't that one called The Black Irish?
There's one called The Black Irish by a gentleman called John Messenger about the Irish heritage, because he was a little skeptical at first. There's also an Irish author, I can't remember, I think his first name is Patrick, I can't remember the surname, who actually did a book around about St. Patrick's Day celebrations around the world and came here and had a great time.
This, I think you were saying, is the only national holiday of a country outside of Ireland
based around St. Patrick's Day. We pride ourselves on that Ireland is the only other one that has it as a national day.
So it goes without saying that you're welcoming Irish from around the world with open arms to come to Montserrat.
Oh, certainly. We'd love people with Irish heritage to come so they can see how we have the Sweeneys, we have Galway Hills, we have Cork Hill, all the Irish names. People who say we actually talk with an Irish brogue, I'm not sure that is the case, but some people say they can see it in how we speak.
Well, most definitely compared to any other Caribbean island, there is a distinctive difference, isn't there? Yeah,
there is, but certainly St. Patrick's Week will be an ideal time for people to come. They can look at the traditional Irish piece as well as the African heritage that we have. As you found out, we're a very welcoming people, very friendly, very warm. The island is very safe. We look forward to more and more people sort of coming to find their Irish roots.
David Crichton.
The island's history was named, allegedly, by Columbus as he sailed past in 1492. It reminded him of the hills outside Barcelona, the Montserrat area of Barcelona, and that's where it got its name. At that time, it was occupied by the native peoples of the Caribbean. And at that time, it wasn't seen as somewhere he wanted to stop and colonize. He passed by on his way to other places. And over the centuries thereafter, it became of more interest to the colonial powers, particularly the British and the French. And it changed hands between them a few times over the 16th, 17th centuries, but eventually settled into a period of British colonial rule. The distinctive feature of that time for Montserrat was the influx of Irish. Now, a lot of that had to do with politics and religious politics in Great Britain at the time. Cromwell's expulsion of Irish Catholics, who first of all came to St. Kitts and were used to develop and manage plantation industry there. They weren't allowed to practice their religion. Basically, they made a break for it to a place where they could feel more free to practice their religion. They came to Montserrat, and they were instrumental in setting up the plantations. They were also instrumental, as were the British, in importing slave labour to work those plantations. So we had this unusual congruence of British colonial rule, Irish at the forefront of the development, and slave labour being brought in to do the work. And the work evolved from sugar to lime to cotton over the centuries. But all the way through there was this very distinctive Irish influence. This is still the only island apart from Ireland which celebrates St. Patrick's Day. Look through the phone book of Montserrat, the majority of the names are Irish. The reason for that being that the slaves, as they were baptised in the names of the Irish plantation managers and owners. So we have the Ryans, the Castles, the O'Garrows, all across the island. And we have a week-long festival for St. Patrick. It's the biggest single festival on Montserrat.
And your flag?
And our flag is Éireann with the Irish harp, joined together with the British Union Jack, which in itself is an unusual confluence of symbols.
Briefly, before we go, to get to Montserrat, somebody typically would first fly into Antigua?
Yeah, they fly into Antigua. You can fly direct into Antigua from Philadelphia, from New York, from Miami. BA and Virgin come from Europe. You get into Antigua, you then have a 17-minute flight on SVG Air or fly Montserrat across to Montserrat. Or if you're more adventurous, you could take the ferry.
Yeah, which looks beautiful.
Well, the ferries, we have a more modern ferry now. It takes an hour and 15 minutes. As I say, we welcome all visitors.
Then you have a variety of inns and little hotels, boutique hotels, and bed and breakfast.
When I say the largest hotel, if you want to call it that, is 19 rooms. Mm-hmm. We have Alveston House, we have an Arundel Villas, we have Grand View, all little bed and breakfasts. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go more upscale, we have villas that you could rent with self-catering, but with maid service coming in as well.
The full breadth.
We have the full breadth, from the small bed and breakfast to the luxury four-bedroom villa with a swimming pool.
The island's connection with the Beatles.
Sir George Martin, who produced the Beatles, fell in love with Montserrat and put a studio here called Air Studios. And subsequent to that, we had a lot of the big pop groups in the 70s and 80s recording here. And
in his studio?
In his studio.
And some of those names would be?
Well, it's Sir Paul McCartney, Stevie Wonder, The Police, Duran Duran, Dire Straits, Luther Vandross. A veritable who's who of who was popular in the 70s and 80s.
And they loved coming here because they could be invisible.
They were invisible to the extent that the population didn't get on like groupies. The mm-hmm. population let them do what they wanted. If they wanted to go and eat chicken by one of the local bars, so be it. You could pass someone on the streets, jog in and say good morning. And they liked that. They were accepted as part of the island.
And Elton John was one, wasn't he?
Yeah, Elton was here. In fact, he met his mm-hmm. first wife here. She was a sound engineer at the studio. It was really a great time because they were able to bring their families on holiday. The families could relax and windsurf and snorkel and those kind of things. And they were in the studios and producing very good music. In fact, on one of the Dire Straits albums, the only non-digital sound is that of a tree frog that they recorded with a handheld microphone mm-hmm. outside the studio one night.
Oh, very cool. Ivan Brown, unfortunately, we're out of time, but what a pleasure visiting another slice of Ireland.
Pleasure having you here, Tom.
For further information, do you have a website?
Visit Montserrat.com.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the heart of the Eastern Caribbean on the island of Montserrat.
Ole, 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 ole. Feeling hot, hot, hot. Feeling hot, hot, hot.
The underbed music in the show was performed by the Chieftains and Montserrat musical legend Arrow, performing his classic song, Hot, Hot, Hot. The only time I've been in the midst of 500,000 happy, festive people anywhere in the world was when I participated in St. Patrick's Parade in downtown Dublin, Ireland. I'm Tom Wilmer. Come along and join us as Susan Kirby, director of Dublin St. Patrick's Festival and Parade, shares her insights and passion for the most incredible and touching affair. We'll then visit with Simon O'Connor, curator of the Little Dublin Museum, as he talks a bit about the history and evolution of St. Paddy's Parade over the years. Susan Kirby.
I have the great honour in being allowed to use Dublin as a playground for the 17th of March every year. The team and I are hosting all of the international media, all the domestic media, and we're going to put on a show today that we believe will really blow people away. It's a very special celebration. We have a number of US bands as well joining us, our US friends every year, very loyal to the parade. We have bands coming from Europe and, of course, Irish bands as well. And then we have pageant companies in a very fun, quirky, innovative way, brought to life through street theatre. There's so much to see and do as part of the whole programme. You can log on remotely to look at this if you're back home in the States via live stream, and hopefully that will whet your appetite to travel next year.
And how many people are going to be at this parade? I heard some incredible numbers.
So we welcome in the region of 500,000 people on the streets of Dublin, and many, many more looking both on the live broadcasts and then on the streaming broadcasts as well. It's a platform here, and it's a platform internationally, and we really value that. We actually very sincerely really, really appreciate people's love and support for the festival and for reaching out to Ireland Inc.
Well, I should let you go. I really appreciate the time. Love super quick, before we go, a website for further information and upcoming.
Sure. Log on to stpatricksfestival.ie.
Susan, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Right.
Cheers.
Hi, my name is Simon O'Connor. I'm from the Little Museum of Dublin and City of a Thousand Welcomes. And we're here just up near Parnell Square, which is in the centre of Dublin City, and it's where the St. Patrick's Day Parade is about to start. In the background, there's a marching band from Seattle. And it's interesting, marching bands were one of the first kind of theatrical aspects of the parade here in the city. It used to be really a boring event that children wouldn't enjoy going to. It was mainly companies advertising themselves. But gradually, as time went on, the parade became more theatrical. It started involving children more, involving theatre, much more colour and costume. And really, from the 1990s, that took off. And now Dublin's parade on every St. Patrick's Day is just a huge, colourful and theatrical event that involves community groups from all over the country. And as always, really superb marching bands from the US.
And there's a lot more than marching bands, isn't there?
A lot more than marching bands. We just walked past the Lord Mayor's carriage. We were talking about how he must have pimped his carriage, and there's just huge constructs. So every year the parade has a theme. It's going to be really great fun today. We've always had visiting American marching bands. That was kind of the musical element, really, along with our own military marching bands. But nowadays we've people from all over come to get involved in the Dublin Parade.
Simon, thank you. This is great.
Thanks a million.
All right.
You've been listening to Susan Kirby, director of the St. Patrick's Festival and Parade, and Simon O'Connor, curator of the Little Dublin Museum. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Dublin, Ireland.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort Maui at Wailea invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious 214 Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning, and Lauren Hayes is our technical assistant.